were the glory days, where did they go? Without a few fossils, there's no way to know. Primal rage, dinosaurs, dead after asteroids. All the talk now is Turok and Blastoise. Beasts of burden, barely worth mentioning. Such and such was better before, no questioning. Those were the glory days, where did they go? Without a few fossils, there's no way to know. 7-Eleven, fistfighting elbow to elbow. Logging online to find friends, hell no. Never heard a hello, coin on the cabinet. Let a loser know you're next up and that's it. No band-aids for boo-boos, no medikits. Winner stayed, loser paid, arcade, etiquette. Mono a mono, and man to man. Lightning finger fracas, I know, throw command. Spinning pile driver, got game girlfriend. Waiting next in line to 69 in the whirlwind. Practically porno, nice and perverted. What's the spinning bird but paradise inverted? I heard sinning is sexually charged. Doll Sims Kebab exponentially enlarged. Those were the glory days, where did they go? Without a few fossils, there's no way to know. Primal rage, dinosaurs, dead after asteroids. All the talk now is Turok and Blastoise. Beasts of burden, barely worth mentioning. Such and such was better before, no questioning. Back when we broke bones and bloody noses. Nowadays it's got guns, nobody notices. Bitches with bullets, assholes in armor. Put up your damn dukes, pukes and pussies. Let's do this, like 1991. Doll Sim unclogs shitters for a small fee, or saves cats from tall trees. Honda tried to turn as a human fly swatter. He taught ping pong and patty cake. Today he does displacement duty on submarines. They fire him from the torpedo tube, and the undersea boat bobs to the surface. Retronautical. Shang Tsung runs a restaurant beside Safeway. He manages the motherfucker until you bitch about the buffet, and he shapeshifts into a busboy or some other staffer immune to blame. Goro, that fuckface had four arms. Now he's a fluffer for bukkake flicks. Johnny Cage still stars in Mortal Kombat games, God help him. Ken completed a Rosetta Stone course in Japanese, only to come to the conclusion that Chun-Li is Chinese. Thinking he could appreciate the culture better, he ate himself obese at Sung's buffet, caught a coronary in Sao Kano for surgery. Sorry shit all around.
Hi! Welcome to our podcast. This is Jeff Green, the editor-in-chief of Games for Windows. Why am I talking like it's a fucking Barney podcast? Hi, kids. Hey. This is GFW Radio for August 21st, 2007, and the entire crew is here for once, plus extra special guest.
The coveted sixth chair.
The coveted sixth chair has now been filled. The search is over. We have our sixth chair. Stop posting about it. It's all settled. It's Robert Ashley.
Hello.
Podcast.
Hi, Robert.
Car.
Yay. One of our regular contributors and regular contributor to 1UP in general.
Yes.
And also a fine human being.
Very much so.
And the jet setter of the group.
We call him Bobito.
Yeah. No, only Sean calls me Bobito.
Well, I'll continue to call you Bobito.
It's a dear.
We're not allowed to.
So who else is here?
Yeah, we need to go introduce yourselves.
Ryan Scott.
Darren Gladstone.
Sean Elliott.
Sean Malloy.
And how many people here already have started playing Bioshock?
Me.
Does playing the demo a million times count?
Yeah, no. So yeah, that's okay. A Sean Malloy and a Robert Ashley. The rest of us don't have it yet.
Losers.
I know.
Hey, I gave a copy up
yeah,
to
he was
to
very
Sean.
Generous this weekend. He had it, he flaunted it, and then I said, I want it.
But you're playing it on the 360,
yes,
right?
Playing the 360.
You can't, both, you can't get it on
the PC.
That's the
true school PC player in me. I was like, it's coming out in a few days. I could play it on PC, or I could play it on 360 this weekend.
And but the PC demo came out today. We're recording this on Monday, and it's out, but I don't think any of us got it yet.
It just went live as we came down to podcast. So.
Yeah, so we're going to check that out.
We've heard from people who've played it, though.
Yeah, and what have they said?
So we can report on their findings.
And
just
their findings
follows. A few, you know, things that we kind of expected, like weapon and plasmid switching is super rapid. No pause or anything, and that way, you know, if you're going to combo attacks and plasmid powers and stuff to react quickly to enemies, that works well. And another interesting thing, the game already, as you could tell, you know, from the 360 version, it's got like a huge suite of just general tweaking options and difficulty options. Mm-hmm. going to the extent that even the console version lets you choose a frame rate lock or not. So if you want to play for a consistent frame rate or you want to go for maybe looking a little better, but the frame rate's going to dip now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, this goes for all versions. It allows you to mess with certain settings so you can turn off radar. You can turn off the equivalent of tooltips and things like that. But the PC version lets you turn off flashing objectives and stuff, which is really cool because we complain, well, I complain a lot about games that increasingly play themselves by reminding you to jump or to duck all the time or telling you that, hey, this big giant flashing doorway is probably something you want to go and press a key on or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a game, I think it's important for a game like this that works, that they've invested so much labor and thought into making, you know, an immersive atmosphere that if you don't want to, I mean, if you want to go the full extent of that, you know, and have it so that there are no sore thumbs, so to speak, in that environment, then you can turn that off. And that's definitely how I plan on playing it.
It's interesting because there's kind of two layers to that, because I've been playing it. So, like, you got the big flashing switches, which I would want to turn off, but I would not want to turn off, like, the little pickups all over the place because they're all over the place. There's, like, wine bottles you can pick up. There's, like, cigarette packets you can pick up.
Yeah,
and if they weren't flashing, I don't think I'd see them because it's a really dark game and they're, like, hidden in corners.
Wait, were they
shelves.
Flashing in the demo? I don't remember them flashing in the demo.
Yeah, they were.
Were they?
It's really subtle. It's not, like, beating it over your head
or
anything.
It seems kind of like as you go closer towards something, you just kind of, like, there's, like, a shimmer off it for a second.
Yeah, there's certain things that are a lot more pronounced, like more key items, but like those I would definitely want to turn off.
And you can't turn them off in the console version?
No, you cannot.
Well, the only thing is those that you're turning off.
Oh, okay.
It's not that. As far as I know, maybe it is that.
If it turned off all of that, I don't know if I would do that.
The example that would be familiar and that's not spoiler territory is when you start the demo, and I've watched someone play the first segment of it, when you enter the world of Rapture and you're getting out of your tram ride thing and you look on the wall, there's like a flashing control box that's like, you know, press this to open the door. So that, for example, would not be a glowing box. It would just be
a radio box.
When you're stuck inside of the equivalent of a locked elevator, you would go and mess with the buttons and then it will work.
Yeah, but that didn't seem like a clue that needed to be pointed out.
I mean, yeah, you're in like
you're
a very
trapped
small
in a room and there's one lever. What the fuck else are you going to do?
Some people are dumb.
That's there.
Mommy.
It is a difference between console and, I mean, it's kind of like, it sounds like PC snobbery. We're smarter. We're older.
No, but seriously,
but developers,
what else can you do in
developers
that room?
Will like constantly say, yes, we expect the PC audience to be a little more hardcore. And that just kind of goes to the territory. If you got a computer that's able to run these things and, you know, maintaining them and stuff like that, they figure maybe you're a little more hardcore about your games. You know, in other words, it didn't just happen as an impulse buy that you got. Well, for most people, that you got an 8800 GTX or something.
Sure.
I will say that there are a couple puzzles, I won't spoil anything, that would have been much more satisfying if the thing wasn't flashing.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I was like, okay, because I knew, you had hinted last week, like, this might be an option in the PC version. We hadn't confirmed it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking when I was doing these particular puzzles, like, if that wasn't flashing, I would have felt so badass if I figured that out.
So are there actual puzzles then?
Trying to figure out. I can't think of anything that to me is an explicit puzzle in the game. Not that I want you to tell.
Right, I know it's hard
whatever,
to talk over each
everything
other.
Seems pretty straightforward to me. I wouldn't call it a puzzle, at least coming out from a console
this
game.
This was kind
right?
of a like side Zelda. Quest thing.
Uh-huh. What about Half-Life? Do you consider Half-Life 2 as having puzzles? I know you just played that recently.
Yeah, like, I mean, all the stuff where you're using, like, the gravity gun to, like, build your way up to
right.
place. That's puzzly to me.
So nothing
and
like
Bioshock
that.
Doesn't have that stuff?
There are a few things like that, I mean, that I've run across, but maybe it's just that I haven't really been paying as careful attention.
Yeah,
you have.
That's actually an interesting point because I always find myself wondering. I mean, like as gamers, I mean, are there just some conventions we don't just it kind of comes ingrained at this point? We don't consider them puzzles, but technically they are. It's just kind of one of those like.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we've been trained enough at this point to know that you know you look for this key or you go to this switch.
I mean, Bioshock doesn't say you are now doing a puzzle. So,
right,
I mean, it's really subtle.
The games that do that are like the survival horror games, especially Silent Hill.
Like, yeah, there's not like, you know, it's not a specifically a slide
you go
puzzle.
Into a screen, yeah, and there is a puzzle on
the screen. The hacking minigame, though, that's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Not forever.
But I'm actually surprised by the longevity of the hacking minigame, especially when it adds a level of anxiety. when you're in the middle of a battle and you're, you know, you're going to face like a bunch of bots or something and you're trying to hack one and everything's chaos. And then all of a sudden you go into this hack screen and if you're not fast enough, you're going to get screwed. And
right. You're going to get zapped or whatever.
It is weird, though, to go from like the crazy battle to playing like Pipe Dream.
Yeah, totally.
What's, wow, I didn't realize that was in this game.
Oh, yeah.
What's the damn PopCap game?
Rocket Mania?
Or, yeah, Rocket Mania. Yeah,
kind of like that.
It looks kind of like that. You just connect the fuses or the pipes over. And,
well, the cool thing about it is, like, if you do, like me, get kind of sick of the, you know, you unlock an achievement that says, you've now done 100 slide puzzles or whatever. You're like, oh, God. Well, you reach a point where you can just go, you know what? I'm just going to start blasting these things with my shotgun. And you can that's totally an option, too. You can just
build auto hacks. Like you can,
I've been doing that too.
To do that.
Yeah. That sounds all very Oblivion, like the whole lock picking mechanism.
Yeah,
there, and then you can, if you want, you can, you know, work on your lock picking spell, which is
Thief
what I did.
Thief 3 did that too, where like you'd have, you know, the lock picking mini game, which was clearly just in another universe where you're suddenly playing a mini game. And for a while, you're just like, cool, and then you're just like, all right, and then too many of these now.
It was something that I was worried about with BioShock as far as the similarity to Oblivion and all of the options that you have for customizing your stuff, because Oblivion is the kind of game that like really puts me to sleep, and I can't stand the game. But
that was our game of the year last year.
Yeah. It is like to me like playing a living board game. Like there's nothing engrossing about it. There's nothing immersive.
You didn't even have fun just wandering around the environment picking flowers.
Just messing with people.
It doesn't have a world. It doesn't feel like you're there. It feels like completely like you're a role player in the woods LARPing or something, you know.
Such the opposite. Like when I played it, I mean, and we all made such a big deal, and everyone continually talks about that grand moment when you exit the dungeon sewers and you look at this grand world that's there for you to explore. But like, just the fun of you're walking around in the mountains and a boar goes running by, and I mean, like I don't know, I felt like I was up in that place.
It just your physical connection with the world was so. Like the way your guy moves, the
did
way
you play
that
in
people,
third person?
No.
Right.
Yeah. But if you
did
do,
you
can see the representation of what you feel in first. I mean, you can.
I mean,
see.
Yeah. The combat was a bit underwatery.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. But not to knock the game that everyone loves, but BioShock is a lot more engrossing and it feels a lot more like a place.
It's also more contained.
And I think actually going off what you said, we were talking about this just before the podcast, but like. What I think is really interesting is how this is a game that's reaching out to people that wouldn't even care about the genre in the first place. Last week, Ryan, you were saying you wouldn't care about first-person shooters. My wife, Amy, she doesn't play games at all. And yet, as I was testing out the demo this weekend, she just kept, like, she stopped what she was doing. She was watching me play, and she actually, like, wanted me to keep playing. It got to the point, like, I was like, oh, crap, I've been doing this for too long. She's like, want to play it again?
Because of the look of it?
The look, the feel, the vibe. I mean, like, she really got into it, the whole experience. Mm-hmm.
Would she play it herself?
No, well, she didn't. No, actually, that's the funny part. She did not want to play herself. She wanted to watch me play.
Mm-hmm. Did she think it was hot
so
to watch you play?
What?
Did she think it was hot to watch you play?
She likes to watch. She likes to watch.
Kill that splicer.
Get that big daddy over here.
Ick.
It's just a cool looking game. I mean, you could tell in the very first segment that I talked about again, because that's how much I didn't want to spoil the experience, where like I watched Ryan O'Donnell at Game Videos and One Up Show play like probably 2 minutes of it, basically just set foot inside the world of Rapture, and by the time he had gotten in there on the little tram ride, I was like, there's more labor and thought put into this minute than I see.
Yeah,
you know, as far as the atmosphere goes, then I see in a whole lot of games and entire levels in Halo, in a lot of, you know, not to name, I guess name names, but just, you know, when you think of like various, you know, EA games, the franchises that come, various other franchises that come out on a yearly basis. I mean, you look at it,
there's
like,
an entire
really,
shooter.
They had an art director.
Yeah.
They really thought of, I mean, every poster on the wall.
Right.
Yeah. Just
and
that,
it's, right.
As you progress through it, again, trying to avoid spoilery, like, if you're worried like that you're going to just be seeing the same thing over and over again, you're not.
Okay,
because, that's cool. That's very cool.
I mean, it all hangs together in the same, you know, Art Deco, you're underwater in this industrialized city thing. But like certain areas have a very clear stamp on them and you're walking through, you're like, okay, this is really fucked up.
Yeah.
In a totally different way than the last area was fucked up.
And that's what I love about the structure of the game is sort of like a... I've always liked games that unfold as detective stories, where instead of being told a story, you're going around finding artifacts from the world, learning about what happened there, that sort of thing. But it's usually kind of clunky. In Bioshock, mm-hmm. I feel like it's on the level of almost, it's not a detective story. It's like you're an anthropologist and you're going down into this mm-hmm. weird culture mm-hmm. and finding all the different parts of it and, you know, seeing all these different like subcultures inside of it, and everything on the walls, everything
yeah.
mm-hmm. that's going on is really relevant.
Yeah, it's those subcultures that kind of unwrap themselves.
Yeah.
Really
using the art to tell, like, it's pretty exactly what you're saying, using the art to tell a story and to contain the game's own history, so to speak, within the way it's put together, rather than having to pick up a document.
Here's one thing that Bioshock does, which is one of those suspension of disbelief things, which I have no problem doing just because it's hanging together so well. But all over the place, there are these little tape recorders you pick up. And I think there's some in the demo, but they're everywhere. And, like, mm-hmm. you know, as soon as you start thinking about it, you're just like, right, why is the leader of Rapture leaving his audio diaries lying around in bar tables?
The egomaniac.
System Shock did that too. Also,
but it's
Fear,
okay. it's
when
fine.
I replayed Fear
matter.
Again, you know, all the stories told through people's answering machines on their phone.
You know? And you just notice it for like a half second every once in a while where you're just like, huh, wait a minute. But
then some of the recording.
Back, right back to it.
It's the early Andrew Ryan podcast, I guess.
Yeah. And it's a great way to tell the story because, like, you'll trigger these audio diaries and then you're totally free to keep moving along while you're
right, at least
to
it's
it.
Audio, right? You're not
yeah.
sitting there
like
eating
you can go into your menus and never pause. You can just like listen to this and go, oh, cool, while you're fighting or whatever.
That's so cool.
Some of the tapes are really well done and
yeah.
really disturbing.
There's a few.
Yeah. So
there's a few that are their own reward, too, because like sometimes you'll enter a room and, you know, oftentimes you're looking for loot. Sometimes the room itself is the reward. You just like look at the room and just go, oh, my God, okay, I have to. That one's stained into my memory. Like even like a Silent Hill kind of game did that, too, where you'd walk into a room. And there'd just be nothing in there except something really fucked up to look at. That happens a few times.
But I've spent like minutes looking at stuff like that. So mm-hmm. It's weird to talk about this and not be able to say something.
I know. I think we can get us going along on it.
Like, yeah. Well, since it is a bitch to talk about without spoilers, but there are general questions from people like me who haven't played it that mm-hmm. I think you can answer without going into citing specific examples and evidence. And one, you've kind of answered it, and that's, you know, I'm thinking – you have this really rigid environment. Well, hypothetically, that it's underwater. You know, you're in an undersea world,
right?
So it's, you know, offhand, it doesn't give you you wouldn't assume it would give you the range that you would have in Half-Life 2 setting, mm-hmm. where you're going from cities and, you know, prisons and beaches and all this stuff. So they find ways to keep that varied.
Yeah, saying. I mean, it never breaks character. Like what you see at the beginning, it's kind of variations on the theme, but they're big enough that like. You feel like you're in a different place, and each area has like a very distinct character to it.
Yeah, I mean, they really built it like the underwater utopia. And if you imagine, like, if you had to live in an underwater bubble, you would want a lot of variety in that. And they try to bring all the experiences of like a big city life into, you know, the underwater city. So there's a lot of variation, but really, I'm too busy killing stuff.
Another thing that really made Half-Life 2 such a standout game for me is, like, of course, the characters. I mean, it's very, like, one of the few shooters, if not the only shooter, where if someone starts talking, I'll actually stop to listen to what they're saying mm-hmm. rather than just, like, trying to bunny hop around the door until it opens and lets me the fuck out. So in this game, what I'm wondering is, I'm used to seeing all the screenshots, and half of it looks like a rogues gallery from Dick Tracy or something, you know? Is there more to it than that? Are there characters that you can empathize with or that are interesting, or is it just, like, pretty much, you know, like a David Lynch surreal scene?
The ones you're seeing are strictly pretty much enemies.
Although they go to a certain length to make the enemies characters in some ways. Like, you'll walk in, like, if you played the demo... There's the scene in the demo of the couple. It's a domestic situation, and they're arguing about how to spend their atom, the genetic material stuff. And it's like this weird moment where you get insight into what it's like to live down there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're real people. They just want to kill you.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're still going on with their
they're still doing
life.
Normal things like killing people
or
and taking
care
their stuff.
Adam makes them all look like Gwildor from the Masters of the Universe movie, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are not pretty looking. But they all look like the Joker or something.
But they do, to a certain extent, like keep the enemies feeling more like characters than just nameless Nazi types. And then there are main players in the story that you're always kind of removed from.
Oh, there are. Yeah. They're like the operators.
Yeah.
Bark. It's interesting.
Again. Hard to do this.
All right.
So one of my questions, not related to the content, is just a kind of general, like the hype for this game at this point is like fairly overwhelming.
It is.
Like everybody's giving it tens. The message boards are out of control. And has that amount of hype so far at all dampened your experience? Like, are we headed for the BioShock backlash now?
It wasn't that good. Maybe. I wanted to play it every free minute I had this weekend.
Okay.
Like, which, you know.
Well, that's a good sign.
Which is a very great sign. It's great. I think it always has the potential to be damaging. Because one problem I have, personally, is that I feel like I knew too much. And I didn't even know that much going into it. I wish
I knew nothing. I think we're looking out in that in that all the things that people read about the game are usually I don't know, it's a hard game to describe and mm-hmm. we're not particularly good at describing games you know, maybe not people in this room, but you know, a lot of stuff that people read about BioShock is pretty vague and it's hard to tell what the experience is like until you actually play it
and
there's a lot of surprise to say just like, oh my god.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
I didn't really understand it until I played it, and I think it's, I don't know, I don't think of games in terms of score, but it's the most fun I've had in a year or two.
So. Yeah, that's all you know. I was just gonna ask, like when you play it, if like what you said, I mean, you want to keep playing, and then when you quit playing, you're thinking about what you just played.
Yeah, very much. I was thinking about it on the bus. I'm just like, okay, I was trying to put together things I had seen into some sort of like. Well, again, I don't want to say it. Never mind.
Yeah.
Well, you do think about it. It sticks with you.
It's definitely the game that everybody on this floor is talking about. Like, just walking down here.
Everyone
to the podcast,
in gaming, too.
We pass, like, three people just all separately talking about the game.
Yeah, some people are walking spoilers.
That's how it is.
I don't want to name names. Fucking David Ellis.
You have to lurk.
Shut up. We haven't played it yet.
Cover my ears all day.
If we're ready to move on a little bit, it's a natural transition.
Yeah, sure.
So I was up in Seattle recently, and I got to visit Valve and play quite a bit. I got to jump around and play various levels. Talk about a way to spoil stuff, to jump around and play various levels of Episode 2. And then also Team Fortress 2. But the thing with that is, like, my whole flight back. Well, basically, I was there with Ryan O'Donnell again. And as soon as we left Valve, we were like, God, dude, that was fun. Don't you wish we were taking that home with us? And then, like, you know, the whole flight back, I was thinking about how I was playing and just some of the stuff there.
Both games?
And
or
both games, yeah. And then someone asked me, well, which one, if you had to pick one that you want to play most right now, which one is it? And it was, like, kind of hard to say because I have to admit, like, I really want to play Half-Life 2, Episode 2, right away.
Are they still calling it Episode 2?
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Okay.
So, well, do they have Episode 1 out? What are you going to call it?
Yeah, it's too late.
They called Star Wars Episode 2.
I guess so, yeah.
So, the thing about that is it answers all the questions. Well, it seems like it's promising to answer a number of the questions that I had and that I wanted to see resolved after I played Half-Life 2. Those were, like, stuff about antlion ecology, you know, where do they live, you know, are there other, like, casts of them? Totally geeked out stuff, but, like, again, that's testament to how cool that game was, where I want to know, like, what the monsters do when they're underground and shit, you know, rather than
where
their monster closet's at.
Is there a Half-Life Discovery Channel or something?
So you go all through their, you know, their environment, that's their issues with the Vortigaunts and the way that their allegiance has changed between Half-Life 1 and 2 and what they're up to and just their sort of role in the greater Half-Life universe. They get into that. Just the coming back to the developing the characters that you're used to seeing, some of the questions that they set up in Episode 1, spoiler for if you're a console-only listener and you haven't played Episode 1, the advisors, that won't really tell you anything. You don't know what that is, but they definitely make an appearance and you interact with them. And the looming question, I don't know if it's answered or not, but it's a possibility. Is Dr. Breen now an advisor? Dr. Breen, of course, is the nefarious evil doctor from Half-Life 2, and who sort of like cut a deal with the devil, with the Combine, who are the aliens that invaded the planet. And then he apparently dies in the mega, what is it, the sort of like meltdown that occurs at the end of Half-Life 2, but there's this possibility, and it's kind of hinted at, or it's either that or it's just kind of like rampant internet bullshit speculation, but that somehow he was able to become his, you know, his mind or something was somehow transferred to the bloated sack of shit known as the advisor. So all that stuff's there.
Man, you do realize
I can't remember any of this.
I'm like,
you do realize you just opened the door for us to talk about World of Warcraft lore forever now.
Yeah, goddammit.
Dude, hey, you guys do that all the time. They give
not
me my
talk about the lore.
So the
there's
fun stuff
coming up in the next over. Next
most immediately the game picks up a it picks up the second Half-Life episode 1 ends, which is, you know that if you played it, and goes straight from there. There's definitely some big events. Now I'm like finding myself in the same position of like, what do I say without giving details? So hit me up with any questions if you got them.
So what did all that stuff that you just said mean?
it means that I like this game enough to care about the story.
Yep.
And there's more gravity gun.
And again, the gravity gun's in there. Yeah. But so get, you know, one of the first levels I jumped into, you're with Alex again. You're talking to her father or some of the other characters, Mossman in the world. But that was really interesting. Like I said, you know, where in a lot of games, when someone starts talking, it's like, okay, let me out the door. As soon as they were there, you're like, okay, this is cool. Like, I feel like that's a character. I mean, I don't feel like it's a real person, but I feel like it's at least I feel fine calling them characters and not just whatever you have in most shooters.
They've excelled at that going all the way back to Half-Life 1.
They have, and
I
it
mean,
just
I remember gets... just walking up to the different scientists way back in the first game and having that be such a novel experience. That they could talk, that you weren't just shooting them, that they fought, that they looked at you, that they responded to
and
you.
And they've really been building on that, you know? I mean, like, Alex now, not only, you know, she was good in episode one, but she has an even greater, you know, variety of reactions and stuff. If you're driving... And she, of course, she always looks hot. You're driving. She comments on, you know, on the way you're driving, if you're hitting things, running things over. Mm-hmm. You know, when she's fighting now, she's moving around and blind firing and just behaving in a way where she seems scared at times. She seems confident, but just that perfect mix where she's not bitching at you and telling you, like, you got to rescue me. You got to rescue me. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, you know, the heroines and or the extra characters that they throw into Resident Evils and stuff. And there's this really cool moment it's not really.
You're debating whether it's a spoiler.
But you're basically fighting with the Vortigaunt, with one of the Vortigaunts who, you know that you fight with these guys now and they've got all these attacks that they do. And Alex is with you. Eventually Dog comes along and it's kind of like the Half-Life version of the Avengers or something. And instead of, because of the loneliness and isolation that characterizes so much of Half-Life 2,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like you look around and you're like, I got all my friends here. We're fucking shit up. And like, you really are. It's pretty cool. That was a cool scene.
I loved, you know, I didn't play Half-Life 2 until like 4 months ago or so because I'm kind of like an underprivileged console gamer from way back. But I finally got a computer that could play something as cutting edge as Half-Life 2. And I played it and it really like blew my mind kind of. It was especially all the character interaction stuff. And the way that all that worked, and I loved those moments between the battles where you'd end up in a place with other people, and you'd be like, "Wow, you know, it really felt like you're alone a lot." And then you would meet these people; it was a real relief.
Did it ever bother you that you weren't talking?
No,
I never had that moment.
Okay. I don't like speech in first person; it feels weird. In third person, I think it's okay.
It's always that contrast that matters. I mean, it's like you appreciate the other characters because you've been alone for a long time. And this goes for a lot of games, but some developers just miss it, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's really important in horror games. You know, thinking about Condemned 2 is coming out, and, you know, Silent Hill, the last game I played. You spend so much time in just these ratty, filthy, disgusting places, you know, where it's just grime and everything. And you really long for, like, give me just a glimpse of the fucking sun now and then. Like, let me just know that there's a regular world somewhere. And actually, you know, did you play Silent Hill 4 The Room? I seem to remember back when I was at EGN.
I played a little bit at the beginning. I didn't like review it or anything.
The cool thing about that is they got it there too in the contrast. And it's like, okay, if we're going to continue to dump you into these shitholes, let's give you one space in the world, and that's your own apartment, and it will be normal. You can look out the window. You see the world as you're used to it, but your door's locked and chained in. There's this hole in the closet that leads you to hell. You could peek through the wall. But what happens is eventually they take that away from you. They give you that, and eventually then the corruption starts taking over that room. Mm-hmm. But then you really miss it, and then it gets to the point where you try to look out the window, and it just is like covered up with crap.
Yeah, I felt the same exact way about that.
But it was such a great piece of psychology. I mean, it was. For a game and just for, you know, just for playing with your emotions and stuff, they got the contrast there. And to take it back to Half-Life, I think they totally get that. And that's one reason why you care about being with people is just because you don't overdo it. You know, Dog is such a cool introduction in Half-Life 2, and you play with them, and as soon as you do, then you're separated from them, and you meet up with them again, and you're like, oh, yeah, that guy was... You're like, that guy is so cool. It would be rad to do all the stuff with him. And he's like, he's gone. And then you're like, you want to see him again. And he comes back, and you're like, yay, Dog. You know, I mean, that sounds pretty cool.
Well, to me, it's that. It's the interaction with the other people, but it's also maybe the bigger picture. To me, it's the pacing.
Yeah,
it's Valve is always so genius about constantly switching up what you're doing. You know, it's like basically like a giant roller coaster. It's really like a rail shooter in a way. Mm. They're just guiding you along from beginning to end. We're all going to pretty much have almost the exact same experience. But within that same experience, like every single area is something, you know, right at the point where you're sick of shooting things, and they give you a whole puzzle sequence. Or
yeah.
You're tired of being alone, and then you get together with a group of people.
Avoiding the combat fatigue, they call it, you know, where if this moment's been super intense for too long, then it's time to let you wind down.
Right.
And look at something atmospheric, one of those areas where you're talking about where you just like to look. And then just the variety. If you think of the difference between Ravenholm and the canals and the beach and inside the Citadel, I mean, there's just such a great variety of an inside City 17 of environments and places. And
right,
and they know that. This time you're talking about it being traditionally it's being like a rail ride, you know, or a roller coaster. One thing that I also wanted, you know, when I was saying I wanted them to explore antline ecology and stuff, is to just like take it off the rail or to widen the rails a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're definitely doing that now. I mean, it's only ever a question of how far apart the rails are, not if they're gone altogether. Mm-hmm. But they definitely have expanded that. You have options. And they're hinting it now for the first time, with a few small exceptions, that you can do a little bit of exploring in Half-Life and sort of be rewarded for it with, like, just narrative stuff.
Huh.
Or something. They're really cagey about it. It was kind of like we could tell, you know, our line of questioning was going in the right direction, because all of a sudden they said, okay, I can tell you that, yeah, you definitely figure something out. But,
that's interesting.
So, you know,
so
the
like
one
extra maybe if you...
One don't. Example in Half-Life 2 that's there is, like, there's this hidden cave and there's a Vortigaunt in it, and you go in there and he has a few things to say. So I'm guessing along those lines, you know, you just kind of go out looking around, mm-hmm. and maybe you find mm-hmm. something or some kind of, again,
like
things
master
are natural part of the environment mm-hmm. that tell you something.
And I wasn't saying that, like, being on rails is a bad thing at all. I mean, I think that can be the difference between, like, the experience that Robert had, say, with that game versus Oblivion, right? If you take the rails off completely, I mean, really, you know, I was one of the people who voted for that being Game of the Year myself, but, like, that was probably my biggest problem with it in a way. Mm-hmm. When you take the rails off completely, and if there's not enough focus or guidance, you can get kind of lost.
Well, right. I mean, that game's biggest strength is that you don't have to follow the story at all, which is, like, also a major weakness if you're a big story freak.
Right. I mean,
but no, they don't force it on you.
But in the hands of a good storyteller,
if you dig, you can get a little more. If you want to stop and zoom in on the little scraps of paper on the walls and stuff, you know, I don't know if the resolution on Xbox... Oh, no, you played it on PC, so...
Because
the Xbox version, the original version, had lower res textures and stuff, but...
Are you thinking...
you just played Half-Life 2 on PC. So a few other points before we move on to Team Fortress and stuff. The G-Man's back. They explain a lot of his motivations and what he's doing, and again, some big developments. And then for the console people, really luck out on this because, I mean, they get Half-Life 2 now with HDR lighting and all this stuff. There's some new character models because they saw, you know, when they're giving the Vortigaunt such a big role and having them on screen that so much, they say, hey, they don't look quite up to spec. So they redid those and all these others with new Fong shading and various effects that they've been working and introducing into Steam as they've been developing, you know, Team Fortress 2 and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's all there. Again, Episode 1.
Did they include Lost Coast on that as well? Or
That I don't think so, but they might as well. So it seems,
did you just
though,
say Fong shading?
Fong shading, yeah.
Totally did.
And
what is Fong shading?
Don't ask, man. You're exploring the... I mean, you're going to expose the lack of clothing. no, it's basically... I don't know specifically how to break it down. I know it has
is
to
it
do
the magic?
With smoothing like surfaces and, I mean, and shading.
It's a texturing effect.
It's the magic.
I saw a before and after picture of a Team Fortress Pyro with and without it, and I know he looked a lot better with it.
I don't know what it does, but I know it works
okay,
well.
Okay, so they haven't decided if they're going to update every, you know, PC version of the game. It sounds like a no-brainer, and they seem to think so too, but the question is just how to do it, because they don't want to force an auto-update on someone when it's like 6 gigs, you know? So it's just going to be a question of maybe there's a window. It's like, click this if you already have Half-Life 2 and you want to upgrade now to the HDR one that's got the new character models and some of the stuff like that in it. Mm-hmm. It's got, you know, it's twice as long as episode one. It's got commentary again. Got twice the commentary, cool. Of course.
Commentary was great last time.
Yeah,
I never actually thought I would listen to game commentary like on a DVD, but they
even in the way we're talking, that commentary has informed the way we think about shooters, not just their game, but shooters in general. Some of the stuff that you were talking about the pacing and about, you know, I use the term combat fatigue. I mean, those come from their commentary.
Did anyone amongst us here check out the commentary in Riddick?
No.
Back when I did, yeah.
Because that was the first one that did
that
it,
was
think.
Cool.
Huh.
It was cool, but it wasn't quite as good.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Team Fortress 2 has also got commentary to jump on over to that. Huh. And the way that works is you just load up, instead of making a game, a general game that people join in, you just make it in commentary mode and you just run around and you look at the nodes and stuff. The cool thing about that is that all that's in, you know, the SDK and stuff. So if you're a clan and you say, hey, you know, we need to find ways to tell new people who start playing about the strategic importance of this zone, the best places to put sentry guns, anything like that, they can go in and do that with their own voices and just put those nodes in. Valve, too, said that it's a possibility that after, you know, a certain amount of time goes by and various ways of play emerge, you know, where it's just kind of like a given that, like, the price of entry is to know that you don't put your SG over here because it's just going to get jacked immediately, but then it's, like, actually really effective here, that they could go in and do that, too, update it. A lot of potential there. And then here's a nice little treat. They not 100%. I'm trying to think of the way to word this right without getting in trouble. Just it's likely that we'll be seeing a public beta for Team Fortress 2 in the future.
Huh.
And be excited about that.
Wow.
Yeah. Confirmed.
Yeah.
GFW Radio confirmed.
Scoop.
Live
Scoop.
Beta.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Just make shit up.
So Team Fortress 2 was really interesting because, I mean, first off, you look at it and it's awesome. It just looks so cool.
Does it still look as good as it had
it
before?
It does. It looks,
that whole Incredibles looking thing?
Yeah. Because when you see it in motion, I mean, even the tiniest details, like when you build an ammunition dispenser or something as an engineer, before they would just appear into the game world. Now they sort of gradually form and they have the vibe of like a 1950s, you know, gas pump and then like, you know, a belt of bullets will kind of like feed out the side and slip down the side of it on one end. Then there's like a little health squirter pump on the other end that's like kind of working its stuff. And even, you know, the teleporters are spinning and operating and gears and stuff moving around. The characters, you have a different taunt depending on each weapon you have. And they're these really elaborate cartoon, I mean, just super animated things that you can do, you know, slap in your ass and just whatever other kind of nonsense you want to pull off.
We've got taunts in World of Warcraft.
I know you do. They don't look as good as this, though.
I say we, like,
that's your nation. Like,
yeah.
I come from country. World of Warcraft, where we have taunts.
In Azeroth.
Oh, even, like, this is tech. Even, like, the spy, you know, you could change costumes. If you didn't, you know now. You basically assume the disguise of one of your enemies and then, you know, infiltrate their ranks. But, like, he pulls out a cigarette case, opens that up. There's a few cigarettes in there, but then there's also, like, the screen of like this Biotron, whatever, you know, and it's just like some more cool tech and you punch in whatever costume that you want to select, you know, from the ones on the screen. And then that's how you disguise yourself. To replace the spy's ability to feign death, which was just like an awesome, awesome feature in Team Fortress. They gave him the ability to cloak, turn invisible for short periods, which it's a decent workaround if they honestly couldn't figure out how to deal with the physics of the ragdoll physics and stuff of a live player, like feigning death. I mean, that was kind of the excuse I heard, but I already do miss that ability because I found all these rats.
Why would that be a problem?
Well, in the old game, of course, it was just like I don't know the exact detail. I do know that the mod makers that are making Fortress Forever found a way to do it. I don't know what their workaround is.
So it's bullshit then.
Maybe it is.
Should ask the mod makers to do it for them.
But it was like so. It was extra risk and reward when you would physically feign death, because if someone called your bluff, they could go sit on your face and like you couldn't get up, and then they like pull out their crowbar and just smack you upside the head. And so like,
it wasn't a gameplay reason. Like they were just like, they didn't say like feign death.
So they said it was a tech reason as opposed to a gameplay.
I don't know. It's kind of like when the last we did a cover story with them. What I thought I heard from it was a tech reason, and it had to do with just the difference in the physics and stuff. Now. But hey, who
knows? We'll probably hear if we got it wrong.
So, okay, I'll try to speed this up now. We're running out of time. Real quick impressions. First, it's like this is really simple just because there's no secondary grenades. And those, I mean, because I don't care about the regular frag grenades. I don't object to them removing them. They were actually quite of a problem in the game. But it was the secondaries, the alt-fire grenades that helped push the distinctions between each kit over the edge. And now that each one's only got like three weapons, with a few exceptions for extra items like, you know, the Spiotron and stuff, this is just super straightforward. But at the same time, it was like one of the most well put together shooters I can ever remember playing. I mean, just even feeling that. I mean, put together, I don't mean balance and stuff like that, but just it feels really like the production on it is just great. Like everything feels right, and it seems like it's just nailing that. But then. My concern would be that the reward for, you know, the longer you play an individual kit in Team Fortress Classic, the more you'd get out of it. You know, you'd learn specialized techniques and stuff. And now I'm worried that will only hold true for on a team level, where it has to do with coordinating your team tactics and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I want that there on the individual level. They say there's stuff that we haven't seen and that people are doing and that they're not talking about. So we'll see. But I also know, like, all said and done, I still was like wanting to play it more, and it was just so much fun to get into, you know, just rocket jump and build sentry guns. And in the last note, the pyro is a fucking menace now. He is ruthless. He used to be the most useless class, and I'm like, we'll see if they did overkill, but like now mid-range damage over time attacks just blind anyone, just set you on fire, and you're sort of like burning and hurting.
Say that whole thing again. Mid-range
Damage over time. That's almost like, see, we can get
your language.
Yeah. RPG. Yeah. Yo.
Area effect.
Yeah. Really is sounding.
It's all the same game.
You guys, is there anyone in this room that's going to play it with me?
I will play it.
I'll play it. I'll play it on Xbox.
I won't.
You got to find this out. Yeah. Before we end the Valve talk, why is it that, like, you got into Half-Life 2 and you're like, okay, all these years, even though technically better looking games had come along since then, you didn't play it right when it launched and you got it, but there's so many people that don't do it. Like, as far, to my knowledge, Dan Hsu from EGM, Mark McDonald have not played Half-Life 2 in any form.
You're kidding.
Haven't. But it's like, because it's so fucking good, and if you like, they're both like shooter fans, and if you think that you like shooters, you need to, like, to be qualified to talk about single player shooters, you need to play it.
I'm an RPG fan, and I haven't played a Final Fantasy since 7.
There's a big division there. I guess you could argue, too, there's a division between console and PC shooters, but between Japanese and Western.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, they're very
distinct. I think it's more distinct.
Well, Half-Life 2 is on a console already, so it's coming to another one, so they really have no excuse.
Crispin, to EGM's credit, really, really liked it on Xbox, and he's a super fan. But I'm curious to see if it'll take with people or if it won't. And if it doesn't, why the hell not?
I don't know. I really think that to me it like showed up at least for like narrative in first person shooters, like showed up everything that I had played on console. I mean I don't know, maybe Shu is like a more of a multiplayer guy. It's certainly not a game to play with your friends.
No, because every time you look on Xbox Live, he's playing like Godfather for achievements and shit. He was last night.
He was on Marvel Ultimate Alliance forever, trying to get like the perfect 1,000. Totally out of right now.
Too, this is great.
Let's have a console guy and every week just so we can, like, you know, give him shit. Yeah. Why are you console guys so stupid anyway?
We're not giving.
Why don't you play the games we like?
Well, you know, can I tell you guys what my first computer was?
Yeah,
I didn't own a computer until 9th grade, and it was from Rent-A-Center. And it came with some sort of like off-brand version of Windows that I can't remember the name of
it. Windows.
It was like Geo something. Geo
BIOS.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't
my first
BOS.
Computer I got in grad school. So
yeah. So that's why, you know, I'm definitely coming from like a console thing. But the weird thing is now that like console games are so focused on what PC gaming has been all about for a while, I'm starting to realize that that's what I dig nowadays is stuff like Half-Life or BioShock, and I think a lot of console gamers are like that. So, you know, if don't feel bad that people aren't playing PC games because they're just playing them on their TV in the living room.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. We don't feel bad. Oh,
no, I just think though that there's like
we just feel sorry for them.
I don't know. Like I want to nurture my conspiracy theories that people just don't. Like, I don't know, they tend to ignore something, if it wasn't console native, but there's just some sort of, like, bias against it. I don't know. I really felt
this
way after
E3. Here's the bias. Here's the bias. I work at a computer all fucking day long. I do not want to sit at a computer and play games after work. I want to sit on my couch. I want to watch my HDTV, and I want to play something relaxing with my friends. I don't want to like continue to sit in my chair, you know?
That's
good point.
It is a good insofar as it's like totally subjective, you know?
Well, sure. Yeah.
I mean, like, I played Darkness the whole time I was playing Darkness. Like, I was wishing it was on my PC because I felt so far away on my couch. And I was like, I'm not in this world unless, like, it's on my nice, like, high-res monitor in my face.
I've seen your TV. I know
that's
why you feel far away. It's like a 22-inch Sony
black
from 1992.
Turn the knob on it.
It changes when you get the HD television.
You get the hanger and the antenna.
You get the good. I have, like, the good, since that's where the hardware's at, like, the audio and the visuals, then it's like, I feel closer to the action.
Maybe if I had one of these chairs. Can I take one of these?
But to bitch on that.
Also, the bias goes the other way, too, you know?
It does.
I mean, we get accused all the time of being of not taking Halo seriously enough.
Right.
Right.
I think Halo's a great game, like, but in specifically in that context, you know?
I do, too, for a shitty
Actually, I don't
shooter.
Think the single player is that bad. But I was going to say, I saw, again, at E3, and it was kind of driving me nuts, where... like, no one even talked about how it was there and playable. No one even talked about the Orange Box stuff. But even more so, when I saw all those awards for, I mean, just the beauty pageant awards, like the best, like specifically, what's the best looking shooter of the show? And like to say COD over Crisis, which is like so, like if you look,
shameful, really.
COD looks great and the new movie just came out. But look at that. I dare you. Put that side to side with Crisis and tell me with a straight face you think it's a better looking game. And again, like that's
that
not saying anything, but it was kind
of
like,
yeah.
Well, on the you could say if you want to go on the objective level and say, I mean, you could objectively say that the engine that the Cry engine is doing a lot more. It's performing a lot and simulating a lot more elements of light, physics, and things like that. That doesn't necessarily mean it's better looking, but that's about as close. I mean, you could make that case, you could go back and look at it and at the results of that processing and point out that they're not in the other game and that, like, because they are in this one, it's pretty damn cool. But the way
I will chalk it up to partially, like, the new factor because we had seen Crisis before. And, like, Call of Duty 4 was like, oh, my God, new! I mean, I think that has something to do with
But it didn't get, it didn't even, I mean, you'd have to, that would have to explain the same, too, for, like, it didn't get, like, FPS a show or anything, and that had a playable thing, whereas you could only watch the other, you know, Call of Duty. You could only watch, Activision and Infinity Ward people
Plus
play
these,
it.
These awards are stupid.
Right, we've already acknowledged.
We totally agree, but it just kind of like, it just bugged me, man. I don't know.
I don't know. I also think saying that a game looks good because its technology kicks ass is kind of sad.
But that's, dude, don't even like try to pull that on me, man.
No,
this isn't
come
like
on.
All I like is like, I
know,
can't tell
I know,
the difference between art direction and like, that's a fucking game fact. Not a game fact. That's like a Gaming Age forum post. Like, this has got better art design. This not art. What do they call it? They call it. They mean to say art design, but they call it something or the other. It's stupid. But yeah, like it, I know it's not like I want video realistic games, and that's all I want. I was just talking about how fucking incredible Team Fortress 2 looks, and it's like as far from reality as you can get. But well, not as far as like every Extend Extra or something. But like, but for that kind of game, COD COD Modern Warfare wants to look realistic. It's not like me comparing this to, Beyond Good and Evil or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I'm like a Call. I mean, I haven't even looked at Call of Duty because it just bores me. Like World War or any war shooter,
World War IX, whatever they're on now.
Although I hear they're up to Modern Warfare.
They are up to Modern Warfare.
So I'm interested in how they represent
the game.
That
looks
stuff.
Totally rad.
I hope you get to bust into Abu Ghraib. And like unhook people from like electric torture machines.
No, you get to
and like
torture
shoot,
them yourself.
Shoot that, the people.
That's a whole mini game.
Yeah, that was cool.
Interestingly, on that game, they can. Well, if I said this before, that they'll identify the specific locations everywhere in the world except those involving the Middle East, and then it just becomes somewhere in the Middle East is like the set piece. Whereas like if it's Russia, it'll say. Here's the street we modeled this after, and here's this, and
right.
But so yeah,
when it's the Middle East, like random.
We're going to
Desertoria.
Right. To the vast majority of Americans, it's just Arabs.
You scary
Arabs.
If you want the whole
fear Abu, them.
If you want the whole Abu Ghraib scenario, though, get Area 51 black site. I mean, that's kind of like the whole thing behind it. But they turned that instead to Area 51. So it's like extraordinary rendition is now a Megadeth video.
That's the only way we can deal with like reality in video games is to turn it into sci-fi.
Right.
It's like the only way we can deal with it. Yeah.
It is, man.
Yeah.
Or something.
No, but I mean that game looks cool. I'm not insulting it. I mean at least somebody has the balls to make a game about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So. As long as there's sci-fi in it.
As long as it's about aliens. Case.
Yeah. People using science fiction.
Fucking aliens. Can't they leave us alone already?
So,
how many times do we have to kill them?
We're
going to take a break, and we'll come back for more good fun and happiness.
3, 2, 1.
You're the best around.
Listen to EGM Live, the weekly podcast for Electronic Gaming Monthly, available every Monday for download at egmlive.oneup.com or podcast.oneup.com or the iTunes Music Store.
Sweep the lake!
Sweep the lake, Johnny.
Sweep the lake!
We're back! So we got a couple big topics here. The big one that we actually... had Robert come down for, so we should get to that before we run out of time. Which was about your travels.
Yes, I travel.
You traveled the world like Charles Carralt to share
often for us, and sometimes not for us, but for various stories that Robert writes.
You should last second.
What have you been to? Like just for the overview.
Where did you go to see The Witcher?
I went to Warsaw, Poland to see the Witcher. I went to. Kiev, Ukraine, and to Chernobyl for Stalker.
Oh, fuck, that's right. You went to Chernobyl.
What
the hell are you doing here? We let him in here.
It's like a
radioactive
it's like
now.
It's like a Geiger counter.
That's
at the door.
That sound in these headsets.
Yeah.
They make you pass through a radioactivity detector before you leave. So.
Do they really?
So awesome.
Yeah.
Is that just for show? It's just part of your tourist
they will definitely stop you there. So.
It'd be awesome if we're sitting down here now podcasting and like we could see Robert's like skeleton starting to glow through his skin here.
I did develop special powers from visiting Chernobyl, but I can't explain them to you. They're very personal. But I've been to Shanghai a couple of times. I've been to Helsinki.
What's up in Helsinki?
That's
plenty.
Alan Wake.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah. What I want to hear about first, though, in all of your many tales is it doesn't involve – well, it comes back around to work some way, but you recently went to France and Italy.
Yeah, so I went –
take me to that train, man. Put me on that train.
So we had summer vacation with my wife's family, the in-laws, the granny trip, as it's called, to France and Italy. And we ended up taking this night train from Paris to Venice and – all the rest of the family gets on a sleeper car to themselves, 6 beds. I end up in one with a stranger in first class, though, which is nice. But I end up hanging out in the family car until late at night, sort of sneaking into my bed with the stranger in the room late at night. Sounds terrible. But, you know, I sleep sort of until about 6 in the morning and start, you know, hearing this knocking at the door, really insistent. Knocking, and I figure it must be the train porter because I hadn't had my ticket checked or my passport or anything. And once I get the door open, I see him there, and his face just like freaks the fuck out. Like he's like, "Whoa!" and grabs me by the shoulders, rips me out of the room, and I'm just totally
dazed. Physically
rips me out of the room, and starts jabbing on me like this, right? He's like,
palm, no way.
Palm out, poking me in the chest and screaming at me in Italian. Every once in a while saying, get out, get out. Wow. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, I have a ticket, I have a ticket. I'm screaming, I have a ticket. I'm rummaging through my pockets, and I can't find my ticket. And he's just, you know, pushing me around, slapping me around. I'm looking for the ticket. He gets fed up, I guess, with what he was doing, and he runs back to his little office there. And do you guys know what an espresso machine's, like, portafilter looks like? It's the thing that you put the coffee in.
Yeah.
It's a big metal handle.
Right.
It's really hot. And he grabs...
Holy, he's running down the hall.
He comes at me with this thing and starts beating me in the arms with it, in the biceps, which I got burned because it was hot.
Oh,
I mean,
shit.
I was bruised.
We're checking it out.
Yeah, it's old now. This is like a month ago.
Fucking Texas country.
I was covered in bruises and everything. But, the whole time I'm just thinking, like, I can't do anything because I'm in the middle of nowhere in a foreign country and this guy could just kick me off the train. So I'm trying to block him and everything. Finally, I run into my room and I find the ticket on the little end table in there and I give it to him. And it doesn't even, like, settle him down. He just starts screaming, like, yesterday, it must be yesterday. And, like, just having a fit. And I give him my passport. And after he, I guess, you know, is satisfied with his amount of screaming at me, he leaves. And I sit there on my bed. And, of course, my bunkmate is awake. And this is where the story gets weird. Because my bunkmate's awake. And I'm like, man, that was really fucking crazy. He was like, yeah. And we start having this normal conversation. He's got a British accent. I ask him where he's from. And he says he's from L.A., or that's where he lives now. And I was like, oh, what do you do? He says, I make video games. I'm a game programmer. And I'm like, no shit. You know, I write about video games in San Francisco, mostly for the Ziff Davis people.
I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, and he goes, wait, what's your name? And I was like, Robert Ashley. And he's like, hey, yeah. And it turns out the guy is a programmer for Activision. Turns out he worked on the game True Crime New York, which was a really like steaming pile of crap game. And I had panned it in a review. And actually, it was worse than that because while I was playing it, I got all these crash bugs, and so I had to be in contact with the PR people who were calling them and complaining about these crash bugs just to verify this stuff. And so he was getting like harassed by my stuff.
Holy shit!
But it was so like what Sean calls waja. So embarrassing. It's 6 a.m. I've been beaten by a train porter. And he starts telling me about how because the game got such terrible Metacritic ratings that they didn't get their bonus for the game and all this stuff. And I'm just like, oh, God.
This is like he grabs the copy handle.
Is this guy happy you got beat?
It was probably
like every developer's dream. What happens to a critic who pans their game?
I bet there was a little bit of like fantasy fulfilled.
Fuck you!
But he was nice. It was just weird.
He's like, I should have mocapped that.
Wait, did you ever find out why this guy was beating you?
Well, because I showed up late at night. I didn't have my ticket checked. He thought that I was coming from one of the second class seats without a bed, and that I had come into the room and
you
slept.
Snuck up in the first class.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And so
that deserves a burning and a beating.
But also, the guy was a psychopath.
Well, yeah, apparently. So, you like complain
you can handle
like,
that transaction without beating
no,
someone?
No, we you don't. We were actually we had a lot of trouble in Italy, and you don't just go and like start trouble with a train porter unless he did avoid hitting me in the head, which I appreciated, and I just let it be because we were like extorted later by another train porter. It's crazy over there.
Yeah, the guy could have been like mobbed up or something.
He's Italian, of course. He
that's what I mean. Aren't they all in the mafia?
I play video games.
Yeah. That or
I play true crime.
That's what I've learned from TV and games. They're all in the mafia.
But yeah, it was.
Or
it was
plumbers.
Really, the funny thing is that's the second time it's happened to me because. On the trip to see Penny Arcade, the game in Vancouver, although this was less embarrassing, I went to Hothead Games, and there's this guy there. A lot of the people there worked for Radical, and there's this guy Joel DeYoung, who is like the one. I don't know if he owns the place. He's a producer. He runs the studio, And over lunch, he was talking about their last game being this Crash Bandicoot racing game, which I had reviewed really badly. And he was talking about how
nice.
Game journalists didn't get it and stuff. And he and
you either
was,
get it or you don't, dude. I was you gotta love that.
I don't get CTR,
but I was lucky enough for him to not realize that I had been on the review. Rad. So I felt I felt okay about that. But yeah.
So hit me
but,
up with
God, oh, damn that story.
I got
that.
That's, really, I got
a, that's a great story.
So going back to that train ride for a second with the dude from Activision. Once that revelation happens, you just kind of sit there going, so that's like
oh
longest,
I got up and left.
That's like we, the longest 6 hours, we, like to the next stop or something.
We were 3 hours away from Venice still, and I'd had barely any sleep, and I just got up and I went back to the family car and crammed into this little seat. Everyone else is sleeping, and I spent like you know 3 hours like this under a bunk.
Wow.
Just you know.
I hope you left
them
with like
wounds.
A, you know, and you'd still get a six today, fucker.
I think it was a three.
Oh, a three.
Yeah.
You got swindled while you were on assignment for us in Shanghai, right?
I did. That made
the story too. That was the the tea incident.
Before that too, though. Like I mean, even on the I thought coming out of the train station, some fool tried to take your bags.
Oh, well, that was later in the trip actually. Like.
Wait. So, what story was this for?
This was for the game Splinter Cell.
Okay.
Jeez, whatever.
Is this double agent?
Whichever
double
one
a-
it was.
It was a double agent
yeah.
cover story.
Yeah, there we go. And
convicting
the facts. Splinter Cell, whatever.
but it was you know I'm a total fool I guess but I was out in this really populated part of Shanghai near People's Park, which if anyone knows Berkeley's People's Park.
Yeah.
It's a lot nicer in,
oh, that's
in China.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's nobody dead in the park.
no crazy cracked out people asking you for change.
Yep.
But I was just walking around. I'd been to the museum and I was walking and there was a couple next to me who seemed you know just like another young couple out doing their thing, and I ended up having a conversation with them and we talk having the sort of normal stupid like foreign. A guy in a you know stranger in a foreign land conversation about hey how do you live here this is how I live back home we're having
do
this
you
long...
like hamburgers
yeah it was yeah. it was like that and they get you know they talked about you know they were students from out of town blah 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 blah. We end up going to get tea at a tea house. They're like you want to go get some tea you know we know a good spot to get some tea and we go have this tea ceremony. I'm thinking like the whole time this is like great. I'm in the culture. I'm meeting people. I'm
got
like,
a pack of
I'm discovering Chinese
pocket.
Tea. I've tried all these amazing teas. They're explaining all these legends about teas. It's great. We get the bill afterwards, and the bill is like $200.
Oh, fuck.
Right? Which I hadn't thought the entire time. I'm like, I'm in China. I can afford tea. Mm-hmm. But it was so awkward, and I didn't even get it at that point. Because I'm stupid.
Hold on. I got to interrupt you. Are we late?
No.
Okay, we're getting dirty looks from the fucker who always gives us dirty looks for being late.
Whatever. Yeah. So go on.
Right. Sorry. Keep going.
No problem. So we end up making this agreement that they're going to pay for, you know, the extra tea that we bought to take home afterwards. And that knocked like $50 off the price. And I left and said I'd meet up with them later. I still didn't get it because I'm an idiot. And about 15 minutes after I left their company, I'm walking down Nanjing Road, which is kind of the Broadway of Shanghai. And there's a lot of hucksters out there, and I didn't really realize it. And about 15 minutes later, a couple walk up to me with the exact same story.
Oh, my God.
And to the point of, like, I mean, the conversation was similar. Like, what kind of music do you like? And their answer was the Eagles.
Hotel California.
Both couples said the Eagles. It was
maybe
really...
the Eagles are just big over there.
No, you told them you're from California, though, didn't you?
Exactly. I did. I did. Yeah.
They might have had a different answer if you were from Texas. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
Well, I guess the first mistake was having the cowboy boots and the
big smile, the big stupid smile on my face. I mean, the second time I went to Shanghai, I ran into those people a million times, and every time I would just kind of mess with them. They would ask me where I'm from, and I would say Shanghai, and they'd say, oh, and then, like, walk away. And I would just sort of, like, lead them on, because they're all out there, like, trying to – everywhere you go, if you stick out there, you're
just
being sold things, like,
you
constantly.
You ever, like, ask them right up the bat, like, hey, can I buy you some tea?
I just go up to actual people.
Just start asking them.
You guys want to go get some tea?
Just cut out the middleman.
The first time I was in France, I got off the train, and some guy was was basically, you know, hustling me for money, and he was giving me this whole story about how, I mean, I was very young and six, in fact. No, I was actually like 22. and he was giving me this whole sob story about, you know, whatever, he lost his thing, you know, just the kind of story you get from everyone everywhere. But because he was saying it to me in broken English, I stupidly was thinking he must be telling the truth, because he's trying through the barrier of another language to tell me how hard he's had it.
Yeah.
So I handed him what was probably like 20 American dollars, you know, and, you know, this is normally someone you might give a quarter to or something. And I could tell he actually looked bad. Yeah, like he looked like he felt bad when I gave him that much money. Like, I can't take this much. You're too stupid. You know? I'm going to give you change for that.
Yeah.
Because I just hucked you too bad.
So he peels out his wad of bills.
Yeah. Here's a tip for you, son.
That happened to me on the BART when I first moved out here. There's the lady who is always on the BART asking for money.
Oh shit,
for
we've
Medicaid.
Seen her every time.
Oh, yeah,
she comes
like
in. You're on. You take the same train as us.
I gave her like $10 once. Like the,
I've caught that same thing like twice in a single day, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but hey, back on the other thing, you have like a good story from Warsaw that you told me that involves someone that works for GamePro.
Can we make fun of the competition?
No, it's not making fun of him. It's actually,
he's just a player.
It just involves
the game industry.
Okay.
And, like,
so what were you doing in Warsaw? What was this for?
We were there for The Witcher.
This is Waja. I like this year.
Man, you get to go all over the world. It's so cool.
I'm incredibly cool.
The fuck are we doing in this job?
Be a freelancer. It's amazing. The main thing is the money. You know, you guys
loaded,
just don't
right?
see the kind of green. That
yeah, you got a big fat roll there. Yeah.
I know what we pay you.
That's your money roll, right?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But we were there to see The Witcher, and we're staying at the Hotel Ibis, and after we'd seen the game, we go out to dinner at this kind of Polish roadhouse type place where you have like traditional Polish food and a lot of alcohol,
mm-hmm.
like so much alcohol, of course. And not that I was fine, but there were a lot of people getting extremely wasted, one of which was this French journalist guy who nobody seemed to know where he was from or who he was with. But he was like incredibly drunk, and by the end of the night, I'm
didn't
sitting
there
with
this.
Didn't
he have a black turtleneck?
The other thing is, it was so
important
stereotypical.
Detail.
He was wearing a black turtleneck.
Oh, he was.
Yeah.
Did he have a beret?
No,
one of those mustaches.
No, he was black turtleneck, glasses, tall, skinny guy.
Yeah.
But I had been hanging out all night with this guy Andy from GamePro, a cool kid, like 19 or 20, Mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
Very stylish,
mm-hmm.
which may have brought this on, but at the in the bus on the way to go back to the hotel, everyone's talking about let's go out clubbing, and you know, which is totally fun in Warsaw. but this French guy like attaches himself to our group. And as we're leaving the bus, he looks to Andy, the Mohawk guy with me, and goes, "I'm going to fuck you tonight."
I had no idea the story was going in that direction.
That's a left turn.
No, it was a left turn for everybody.
Whoa.
I mean, I've retold this one so many times to other people, and my version always emphasizes like what you told me at first is that as soon as you landed, the cab driver, first thing the cab driver was doing was like emphasizing that he could get you women. Did you want to go to because it, to
Miller
set up this
everywhere.
Environment of sex? Because he also said the GamePro guy was just like way convinced that he was going to score big with the Polish women.
The deal was because there was this guy from Atari who had gone out clubbing the night before and like swore up and down that he had three women that were all over him because he said he was an American. So that it born this idea.
Yeah, because we're so popular over there.
Yeah.
Actually, we're pretty popular in Poland.
Poland, pretty popular.
There are
popular.
More Poles in America than there are in Poland now. And there are a few reasons for that that are not funny, but I mean, that's a fact.
But that's what inspired the club visit, and the whole thing was just so. I mean, because the French guy came with us, he forced his way into this whole thing, and he kept on in the club, like going up to everybody and trying to dance on him, and like getting in everyone's face. And
so did this game pro guy get lucky with the French guy?
No, the game pro guy was running his game on the Polish ladies and avoiding him very successfully. The French guy ended up getting kicked out for something that happened in the bathroom. One can only guess.
Don't want to dwell.
So
yeah.
So,
I got a story. One time I traveled like across the city to my friend's house, and we used to always play GoldenEye N64, which was like surprising to people because I'm such a PC shooter whore now. But that was where I got my start, and he would always play. This piece of shit would always play Grace Jones. Like, what's her character's name?
Mayday,
yeah, he would always play Mayday, and like he would get so mad because we'd always go for him. You know, we'd like shoot Mayday. It's a big, tall, fucking tall character standing out. So one time he's just like, "Fuck you, you fucking quit kidding me!" And all of a sudden, I was like, "Grace under fire, dude." But that shit was truly funny back then. I laughed so hard because
you had
to be there because there was a big pause and everyone was like. Like, it's just utterances, you know? Then they're like, holy shit.
It's pretty brilliant.
How many fights did that game start?
That game caused
a lot of fights. That game was all of my college
You're
experience.
Looking at my corner. I can tell you're looking at my corner.
Yeah.
That goes well with our intro that only a few of you have heard here today, and gives me a chance also to give credit to Zooted Granny once again, who spent all the time and talent doing that for us.
Actually, which one
Doing
went up?
The production.
I didn't hear this one.
Yeah, it's about fighting games and sort of like the old the difference between how it was the arcade and the traditional street fighting game that filled that place, and then the super competitive gameplay later became the domain of the first person shooter and stuff like that. So yeah,
spin the yarn.
So we got 10 minutes left.
You want a piece of random news?
Let's sing some news.
I just found this out today that from Chud, Cinematic Happenings Under Development.
Yeah.
And they, it's kind of like, it sounds like an Ain't It Cool News type thing where they track stuff, but,
yeah, it kind
of is. So someone ran a review of a script for Jurassic Park
4.
It says the script's credentials were impeccable. It's William Monahan and John Sayles. Content was a little on the odd side. You see, this time out, the story wouldn't take a group of humans to Isla de la Carnosaurs, but rather bring 5 trained and armed dinosaurs together to meet out prehistoric justice.
Wait. Say that again.
Armed and trained dinosaurs.
Armed and trained. Okay, so
what do they need to be fucking armed for?
Sounds absurd. Dude, you guys like Brumac. We put Brumac on our cover and we're like, yeah! You start talking about Jurassic Park version of Brumac.
I'm thinking this sounds awesome.
Wow.
That's what the series needed.
Dinosaurs with guns?
Yeah.
Okay,
so this is Bloody Disgusting has also learned that Universal's begun casting, which will go before the cameras this winter in Hawaii. They also hear that the basic storyline, genetically modified well-armed dinosaurs, remains the same.
Sweet.
I hope the subtitle
Sharks
is
with
weapons
lasers.
Of mass prehistruction.
Prehistruction.
I fucked that up.
This is where video games, though, are like a negative force in the world. Because, like,
indeed.
If not for video game, well, I don't know. There's some pretty shitty movies, but I kind of think if not for video games, this script wouldn't have made it as far along as it has.
I don't know if I'd say
it.
There's been so many shitty movies way before games ever came along. I don't know if
it sounds this like time the dinosaurs went, you know have what? Guns. They were like, what was the most popular selling video game of last year? And then they look at what's the fucking most, like, talked about creature in it, Brumac or whatever, and they're like, "Hey, we already got the dinosaurs.
Which dinosaurs John could actually Sam. Hold a
put
gun?
Put a tank turret on it.
Don't most of them have those little
like tiny baby arms? Yeah,
like
because they're probably
arms.
Just going to glue them onto them. Yeah. They're probably just going to put like a
oh,
tank
they're
turret
like
on
mechs
the back
or something
of a brontosaurus.
Yeah,
they got to be genetically enhanced to be really smart, like V3 or something.
Oh, that's going to fucking rock."
It's just like kids. Adding a laser to a shark. Like our
exactly.
Our dinosaur is not.
Kill you.
Yeah, our dinosaur is not deadly enough. Like, damn it, these dinosaurs can't kill fast enough.
Everything
you thought the raptors were scary.
Like before, everything, yeah. Yeah, like
laser guided tracking.
Everything menacing about a dinosaur doesn't need the gun, and then everything that like is menacing about a gun doesn't need the dinosaur to make it any more effective. You know, like
that must have been some awesome, you know, marketing planning strategy meeting to be in. It's dinosaurs with guns.
There'll be a video. What about that?
No, pass
game.
That weed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? Fuck it. That's what the response was. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Well, they have my interest peaked, and I would have ignored any other plot from
Jurassic Park. So Spielberg's probably not directing that
one,
right?
Maybe it's kind of like that. They just don't give a shit. It's like snakes on a plane. They're like, we'll just have some like a bunch of like internet retards making jokes about it for like 2 years straight.
I bet it's more like that, too. You're right.
Right, but snakes on the plane, you know.
There'll be a Pirates versus Ninjas movie, too, for the same reason, like just right now for that reason.
You're right. Yeah, you're right about that.
You know what?
No doubt.
Fuck it.
The internet should kill itself.
Hey, we have time. We haven't got kicked out yet.
Yeah, you hear that, internet, if you're out there listening.
Hey,
let's do it.
You want to hit up that ESRB thing since we haven't got kicked out of here
yet?
We got a couple minutes to hit up the latest ESRB stuff.
Beat the clock.
It's just a general, we've kind of talked about this before, to come back to it. Gama Sutra put up a story today where Factor 5 president Julian, and I'm sorry for not being able to pronounce your last name right. It might be Egbrecht. Says devoted his keynote to censorship in games, sharply criticizing the ESRB for a bizarre system of rating games, such as his own PS3 exclusive Lair. Some of the things that he takes issue with are interestingly the way that the ratings are allocated. Mm-hmm. One example he has is that what is this?
It was the blood splatter with chewing up humans as opposed to like setting them on fire. I think that was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sending people on fire. I'll just read it. Okay, so
exactly.
For example, you could blow up a huge flying manta troop transport, a living being, but Factor 5 had to reduce the gore many times thanks to feedback. In the end, only the explosion is left. The second example, dragons controlled by the Lair player eat humans, and the dragon can interactively chew on the humans with intended and already programmed blood spray and physics effects. In the end, to get a teen rating, all the ragdoll physics and blood had to be removed from the title. So, of course, they were still eaten. But they just weren't ragdolls being eaten, and they weren't, you know. And you could say that, both for the same reason they wanted to put the ragdoll physics in the blood is because it enhanced the sense of, you know, what was happening.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is something kind of silly. I'm reviewing, you know, Medal of Honor Airborne now, and that's like a series that traditionally gets a teen rating, and because there's no blood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so weird. You're still shooting a guy in the head. You get extra points for doing it, and a little icon appears on the screen to tell you you've done so. But because no blood comes out for whatever reason, it's just one of those, you know, mysteries of the way
that... Someone's got a checklist over there.
Right. This is a little bit of a dog bites man story, right? I mean, because the moral here is like the ratings board are morons.
Right.
Or their rules are morons. But that goes the same for like all ratings boards, doesn't it?
Here's one other example to give because it's important. He says he explained in the game you could spew fire setting thousands of people alight who then run around screaming. But that was no problem for the ESRB.
Right.
Because, once again, there's no blood.
Yeah. See, that's what's amazing.
Or you can change the blood color sometimes. They're okay with that. That's the absurdity.
Well, the Mortal Kombat thing.
The funny thing is, in games, you can kill as many people as you want as long as it doesn't feel like you're killing people. Like, as long as you feel like a disconnected psychopath, then it's all good. Like, kill millions, thousands, whatever. It's fine. But if you make someone feel like maybe they shouldn't be popping people in the head with a shotgun, then, oh, man, that's terrible.
That's too messed up.
I think maybe you should feel like there's some consequence to shooting someone in the head. You know?
Yeah. So, right, dude. Good point.
Like in Condemned, the first time you club someone with like a piece of like rebar or something, you're like, damn, did I just do that? I mean, because they get that, you know. And then it makes it slightly, I'm not trying to promote the case for them being like the most tragic enemies you've ever fought, but you're like, they were human at one point. You get the whole vibe with the zombie where we're so used to zombies now, it's like, fuck it, just shoot them all. It's like Smash TV or something. But at once upon a time, the whole part of the allure of the zombie was that, like, well, that might have been your cousin or something.
Grandma.
And at one point, that was and that, of course, is the equivalent in Condemned. See if you had anything else to say.
Well,
So Julian just criticizes the whole system after this as being absolutely bizarre, and he calls it a charade.
Well, I think part of it he was also saying is that, you know, it is kind of like this all or nothing. Like, there's either that teen rating or the mature rating. There's no like equivalent of a PG-13 where you can have like a little bit of leeway to add a little bit of those functions in.
Right, he did say that. Yeah, and he's probably right that there should be something in between.
Right. Well, plus,
they have that in Europe, right?
I mean, obviously, they could have kept this in if they were going for an M rating. So there's that whole other element of like they were trying to get a teen rating, you know, and that's the publisher's kind of decision.
Right. But I mean, like, and at that point, are you taking away enough? Are you damaging the gameplay too much just to hit that teen rating? You know,
it does seem like a lot of games that are pushing at the edges of each of the categories. Like that game wanted to push the teen game a little bit in the more explicit direction. While, you know, you hear Condemned again, that I can't say the guy's name, but there was one of the designers of Condemned was talking in an interview about the chilling effect of Manhunt 2 being rated AO and how they were scaling back what they were doing in Condemned 2 out of fear of that, you know. And you get the situation where M is like the highest possible rating any game with commercial appeal could possibly get, but
yeah.
You know, it's definitely a cap on what you can do in games.
The larger story, too, that's not unique to games, but just, you know, media in America in general, is the weird disparity between how we respond to violence and sex.
Yeah,
and,
well, and
he points that out, too. He's you cannot have any, like, element of sexuality in the game, especially he says you can't indicate anything about homosexuality. But it's interesting because... I mean, I don't even really need to talk about it. We're all used to hearing the argument, but hey, sure. Just think about it. The fact that, like, a pair of titties is going to, like, ruin someone's world, but whatever else you can do in Manhunt is...
Well, you know...
Right.
That's something that, over the years, you know, the letters that we've gotten into the magazine, you know, I get mail all the time from readers and from parents, and as a parent myself and as editor-in-chief in the past, I felt if it's a like well-written letter, if it's somebody you just saying fuck you, you know, and not even spelling that correctly, you know, F-U-K, I'm not inclined to write them back. But if a parent writes me with a concern about something in our magazine as far as it relates to their kids, I'm inclined to want to write them back. And what bugs me more than anything else is when I get letters from parents because they're pissed off that they saw something in the magazine that they felt wasn't appropriate for their kid. And it's like a Guild Wars chick in a, you know, in a leather top where right. like most of her breast is exposed, but not even completely. And then on the other side of the same spread, there's like eight dudes with their heads cut off.
Yeah.
But what bothers them is the half exposed breast. Mm-hmm. And I've actually even said that in my responses to them. I'm saying I'm not judging you. I'm not telling you what you should be offended by or not. I'm just saying, though.
But
I find it interesting that this is what you just write.
Is anyone really surprised that humans are more comfortable with killing each other than having sex with each other?
That's cultural,
well,
though.
That's definitely cultural.
This is
100%. But it's cultural across the world, practically, except for Europe.
Well, I was going to say it's Quaker culture.
Third world culture.
No, but I mean, like this is not an 8-minute conversation. I totally wish we had more time for this. Crap. No, but the short version is like we've had this ass backwards grading system for basically since the foundation of our nation. And God forbid we talk about sexuality at all. Mm-hmm. It's totally absurd. I mean, they left Europe for a reason because they wanted to be anal here.
Yeah. Well, and also sex is a lot hotter when you keep it dirty. That's my theory. that's my theory about all this stuff.
Power.
You know, it's like the Florida congressman that got arrested for soliciting a blowjob in the park a few weeks back. I think all those guys who want to like outlaw dirty sex while committing it themselves just want to keep it as like perverted
as
possible.
You're right. Just because it turns them on
that much more.
Yeah, I think Americans just really like really really like dirty sex.
I think you nailed.
Here.
Yeah.
Three cheers for Terrence.
So, that's a perfect place to end.
And that's our podcast for this week. Thanks for joining
Darren,
us, Robert.
Thanks. Just when we say we're done, didn't you have to announce some winner for your...
Oh, no, actually, I announced it in the forums.
Okay.
And,
then I fucked it up.
Thanks, Dick. No. No.
Say your last words again, then. Let's pretend we can end it on a good note again.
No, it's good. I should say, X Paranormal X did an awesome job at the Whiskey Nerd contest.
Hey, I have a question. You didn't give it to that guy who posted that picture, did you?
Dude, what's this voice I hear in my headset?
You guys know what picture I'm talking about.
Oh, that picture.
Oh, no. Oh, man. The extreme poop soccer?
Oh, God.
No. Yeah.
No, that picture would wreck me.
It was a shisa pic.
Seriously, you know what? I was about to go out to lunch. I totally ruined my
that
day.
That was the grossest picture I've ever seen.
I think it was Duran's. Did that one?
Oh. This is just utterances.
Okay, yeah.
Didn't visit our forum. But no, we can tell them what it is. It was like a dude covered in human feces, eating human feces at a computer desk.
Yeah, he had like a poo-poo platter.
Some asshole put that on our forums.
Yeah, and then some asshole linked that to me on instant message.
You like that shit,
fucker? Sean just sends me, hey, check this out.
You know not to click on those. I didn't click on that shit.
I said that shit all around.
As soon as I saw that on the forum, I was ruined.
All right. We're done. And we will be back next week with more. Robert, will you ever join us again?
Yes, please.
All right.
All right.
We'll have you back.
Thanks.
Sean? Oh, you look like you had something to say. Something to say?
I was waiting to take my headset off and go.
Okay, so do that.
So go for it.
See you next week.
Keep it mature. Keep it professional and intelligent.
What are you telling me with your hand right now?
That's a countdown.
It's a countdown to us going on.
Why do we have to count down to end?
He needs moments of silence.
Silence, so I can edit this.
Okay.
Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye. Eba, 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 Eba